Welcome to Breakthrough Success. I'm your host, Mark Roberti, the content marketing expert, bringing you 5 new episodes every week where I and top-level guests teach you how to take your business to the next level and achieve your breakthrough. Hello, Breakthrough Success listeners. I just wanted you all to know before the episode actually starts, I've been working a little bit behind the scenes to give you something really special. So a while ago, I wrote my book, Content Marketing Secrets, which helps people create, promote, and optimize their content for growth and revenue. And I just put the finishing touches together to offer that for free to anyone who is interested. So if you want your free copy of Content Marketing Secrets, all you have to do is head over to markgoberti.com/book. Now, let's jump right into the episode. When we're first at that stage of setting goals, especially when we set really ambitious goals and we're dreaming big, looking from where we are now to the horizon of what we plan to accomplish, it can sometimes seem very impossible, it can seem very challenging, but today's guest has proven time and time again that the impossible is actually quite possible, and that's what we are going to talk about in this episode. So, who exactly is today's guest? Well, he is the visionary founder of Bluefish, the world's first luxury concierge that delivers the highest level of personalized travel, transportation, and cutting-edge entertainment services to corporate executives, celebrities, professional athletes, and other discerning individuals interested in living life to its fullest. His recently published book, Blue Fishing, teaches people how they can make things happen and make the impossible possible. Today's guest for episode 202 of the Breakthrough Success Podcast is none other than Steve Sims. Steve, it is such a pleasure to have you on the show.
It's thrilling. I'm not quite sure I can carry the same excitement and enthusiasm, but I will try and keep up with you.
Steve, I'm really happy to have you on the show. I'm really looking forward to it. And I mean, like, looking at all the people who you've been able to get involved with and all the opportunities you've given to people hoping for a really great experience. I mean, it is really amazing what you've been able to do. And like, we'll talk about it in the show. You'll realize what it means, like, how some of the impossible things that Steve's made possible. But I'd love to get some background first before we go into all that. So I'm wondering if you could first share with us why we started Bluefish, and then we can move on from there.
I didn't. I was a doorman of a nightclub, and people just started asking me, oh, do you know so-and-so? Oh, can you get this? And being a Irish lad on the front of the door, for some reason, I just thought to myself, well, why can't you get it? And then I realized that a lot of people were actually embarrassed to ask. So I would go and do it and then go, there you go, done it. Oh, by the way, that's going to be $500. And they were thrilled to pay. And I noticed very early on that people want what they feel as though they can't get. And I had a ignorance to the humiliation or embarrassment factor that I could potentially get a no. So those two combined meant that I started doing it just because I was kind of perplexed that they couldn't try it themselves. And the requests went from, they want to go to these clubs that they can't get into, they want to go to these private yacht parties that they can't go to, they want to go to the Formula One paddock club in Monaco, they want to walk the red carpet at the biggest award shows. And it's just grown and grown to the to what Forbes called me, the real life Wizard of Oz, as to where it is now.
And that is no exaggeration. I mean, like, we could go on with the stories about, like, getting Elon Musk. And there's just, like, so many other examples that we could go into. But one of the themes is that when you first hear the story, you're like, how is that even possible? How did that even happen? And I feel like if you weren't, like, here with Bluefish, people would still think that some of the stuff is impossible. So how do you make things that seem impossible possible then happen?
Well, for start, I love it when people come to me and they go, oh, I want to do this, but it's impossible. Okay, there's no way better to challenge an entrepreneur than to tell them that they can't do it. I didn't realize it, but I've got a slightly different perception. I insert the word not into a lot of things, which is a negative word, but I look at it and go, why is it not possible? You know, why can I not do that? You know, why not me? You know, and so instead of making it a statement of absolution, I make it a question. And questions search for answers. So someone says to me, I want to close down this museum, or I want a piano lesson from Elton John, or I want a drum lesson from Guns N' Roses, but it's impossible. I'm the guy that goes, well, why is it not possible? Why can it not be done? And I just push it to kind of like come up with questions. And as I say, eventually, maybe it's my persistence, maybe it's my ignorance. I think ignorance has taught me very well. A lot of people will go, oh, I can't talk to him. Meanwhile, I'm chatting with him. So that ignorance has got me through a lot of places. But I want to go up there and go, hey, why can't we do this? You know, I've heard a lot of people telling me that we can't do this. Can you explain to me why we can't? Why can't I close down the museum? Why can't I get married by the Pope? Why can't I do this? And 9 times out of 10, people don't have the answers, and then they let me in.
And I mean, like, just hearing those examples again, it's like, wow, all this stuff, it does seem impossible until you see it actually done. And then you realize, wow, this is actually happening. And I like how, like, we like to say, like, with affirmations and stuff like that, you don't want to say, like, I am not overweight. You want to say, like, I am healthy. But how you're framing it into a question is something completely different. And it's something that really does get the mind thinking about how this can actually happen.
Yeah, I get a lot of people come to me, and especially the more, and especially since the book came out, I was a big deal, arrogantly, to a small percentage of the world. Very few people that knew me or knew of me, but those that did were millionaires, billionaires, and zillionaires, and owned, you know, England. And that was my marketplace. And since the book, and since more media, and since a lot of TV and stuff like that, people come up to me and they do the exact same stupid thing. They go, oh, yeah, you're the guy that did this with Elon Musk. I've always wanted to do this. And there's all this excitement in their voice going, I really wanted to do this. And then you can almost like click your watch as they go, but I can't because they will spend 10 seconds telling you what they ultimately want. Then they will spend an obscene amount of energy and focus, detailed focus, for the next minute to 2 minutes telling you why it can't be done, rather than focusing that energy on the one reason that it should. And the more they detract themselves from the probability or possibility of it ever being done, the more miraculous I actually end up looking.
And for something like this, like Bluefish, your brand, the ability to like make all this happen, like I know it's a lot of you, like you're the mastermind behind it, but I know you have a team behind you, and I feel like a lot of people do have teams behind them. And I wonder if you could just share with us your experiences with growing the team and gradually getting better with delegation along the way.
Well, delegation is the evil of all entrepreneurs. We hate to delegate. And most of us believe that once we've learned how to do something, and we've all been through it, we think to ourselves, well, hang on, it takes me 10 minutes to do it, or it's going to take me 2 days to teach you how to do it. Screw it, I'll do it myself. And that ends up doing is you end up paying for a load of people to float and walk behind you. And that makes no sense. So you've got to learn, instead of paying people to learn how to do stuff, invest in them to the point that you don't have to. So that delegation is a very, very tough one to get. It's one of those things you have to force yourself. It's like jumping off a cliff when you're on a bungee jump. You have to force yourself to delegate. It's tough, but you have to do it. But then the team, oh God, trying to find people that are as passionate, dedicated, and as focused as what you do or what you are able to do without them trying to take it over is damn near looking for a purple unicorn, not just a bloody unicorn, an actual specific purple one, maybe even with green spots. It takes a lot of time. You've got to be prepared that you're going to go through a lot of dross and shit. You're going to be firing a lot of people. What you're ultimately looking for is fantastic intrapreneurs. Now, an entrepreneur is the visionary, the one that will jump off the cliff and build a parachute on the way down. That's the entrepreneur. The intrapreneur is someone, the COO, the second in command, and you can have a million second in commands, that's there to support and assist you building that parachute on the way down. Now, they're not the entrepreneur that's going to jump, but they are going to pass you the materials necessary. So you've really got to be looking for intrapreneurs. And I think not a lot of people are using the word intrapreneur. And some of them that are using it as a derogatory. Oh, you're not an entrepreneur. You're an intrapreneur. Screw it. Every leader needs supporters. And an intrapreneur is a vital aspect to get people forward. Elon Musk is, personally, I can tell you, a freaking genius. But he wouldn't be able to activate and actually be able to do what he does without 1,000 entrepreneurs behind him carrying the same torch.
And I mean, that's a very important point that you bring up. Like, you look at the leader, like Elon Musk, Steve Jobs, or anyone like that. There is a gigantic team behind them who is helping them to achieve the success that they're achieving. And one thing I want to ask about you with your brand is, one of the things that people feel like they have to do is they have to, when they create their product or service, try and sell it to everyone. And you have such a narrow focus, millionaires, billionaires. It's not like the person who you just meet up with says, hey, I want this to happen. Like, you're catering to like some of the like the top people. So I'm wondering if you can share with us why you decided to go so narrow with your focus on your customer avatar, and why you weren't thinking like, oh, should I be doing this for everyone, or any thoughts like that?
Well, I even go even further. For a start, my website, my concierge firm, Bluefish, it doesn't even have a phone number. So you can't even contact us. How stupid of that is in modern day marketing to have a company that doesn't even have a phone number. You have to apply. It costs $5,000 for you to apply. And then, arrogantly, we interview every applicant before we decide on whether or not we accept our entry fee. So you talk about narrow focus. That's narrowing down a narrow market already. But I have discovered that as long as I take on a few of the right people, I avoid most of the wrong problems. So I would rather take two really qualified, relatable, easy to communicate people that, and big gesture here, can afford me, that I want to deal with, than 20 people that are just going to pay my mortgage for that month. I want to grow, but I want to grow by the right people. So Bluefish is very focused on bringing the right people through the door. And quite simply, I'll repeat it because it needs to be repeated. If you take the right people in at the beginning, you remove 99% of the problems, and arseholes do not get better with time, no matter how much money they got.
And I really, it's like there are very few business models that have the idea where it's $5,000 just for an application, but that does eliminate a lot of the options. You're only getting people who are really committed to, who are going to be really good customers later down the road. And for like, there are some people who they may not necessarily be able to charge that much, but it's just a part of like knowing who your avatar is. I mean, in your case, it's millionaires and billionaires. They have the $5,000 and they're willing to make that investment for high level luxury concierge.
Yeah, yeah. And we don't make it easy to get a hold of us specifically. You know, it's designed to be awkward to get hold of us, because if you've managed to get hold of us and you're willing to go through all of that, then it shows you've got focus on what the end goal is. If we just put it up on the website, hey, apply here today, phone me today, chat with me here, then you're going to quadruple, in fact, based on us, probably 100-fold your contacts per day. And all that's going to do is give you 99 people that don't fit.
Now, like the tactic you're using, you're not getting as many people. I know that is by design, but for the people who you do get, like, how are you getting them? Is it through word of mouth? Is it like they just saw you in an article, they did everything they could to reach that point? Like, how do you get the few people who do the application?
Well, when you talk about referral businesses, we are in excess of 97% referral based. So you will get someone with power and with a bank account sitting in a party talking about how they were driving a Ferrari around the Monaco Grand Prix circuit, and someone will say to them, how the hell did you do that? And they will turn around and go, I got a guy. And they'll say, I want the introduction. And that's how we get the business. You do get people that just go to our website and just blindly apply. And then they will get interviewed, and you will get people that read articles on us from Forbes and Inc. and CNN. And they then reach out to us and apply for membership that way. So, but over 95% of the people come to us going, Johnny told me that you were the man. And every time they do that, we say, you're correct, we are, but not for everyone. Please complete this link and apply. So I really don't care if you're an A-list Hollywood celebrity, if you're a major athlete, if you're royalty from around the world, you're filling in that form and you're being interviewed.
And I mean, it's really great that you view it that way. There's no like double standard for like someone who you really like and who just says, hey, can I get into this? And you have that same level of standard for every customer, regardless of who that customer is. And I know your service caters more to the millionaires and billionaires of the world, but your book, Blue Fishing, I mean, I like the idea how that book is targeting like people who don't necessarily have that much money. So you're able to target more people with different products and services. And one of the things I know you talk about in your book is like, what exactly makes a brand great? And I'm wondering if you could give us some pointers on there and what you believe holds most brands back from being great.
Well, if I can digress first off and just let you know why there is a book, if you don't mind. And if I digress and you don't like it, just tell me to stop.
Go for it.
But we had had, the book's got a bit of a story behind it. We had been approached to write a book on the rich and famous and who we dealt with. And we've been approached from TV stations, book publications, magazines, documentaries. And each time we said no, quite simply because if we started talking about the clients we deal with, we'd be one, out of business, and two, probably dead, you know, by cocktail hour. So, you know, we can't talk about the clients we deal with. We had one day, and I was doing a lecture, and I was doing it not so much on what I did, but more on the tricks, tips, and habits of how I did it. And then I got a call one day from the publishing house, and they said, hey, we saw this interview you did online. How about doing the book, not on what you do, but how you do it? Now, bearing in mind, I'm a bricklayer from East London. I didn't come from money. I was never given anything other than firm values and a smack in the mouth if I spoke out of turn. And now I get to have these people in my Rolodex and text them whenever I like. So the book, for me, was a great way of imparting what I knew that would get you out of the hurdles and hopefully stop people giving those 2 minutes of why it can't be done. So for me, I like the idea of doing the book because the challenge that I now had was to stop you overanalyzing and building up the fear factor when you try to do these things. Because everything I do, everyone turns around and says, oh, that's fantastic. I could never do that. If you say you can't do it, you're right 100% of the time. So that's why the book came out. The book is written by me and Megan, and we put together the simplistic tactics I use to overall build up your communication and hopefully show you the ROI on relationships. Far too many people now think that the only way you can enhance your life is to have a phenomenal Bitcoin portfolio. As far as I'm concerned, screw Bitcoin. Relationships will give you the best return on investment time and time again. And that's why we brought it out. And now it's become pretty successful. Now people are starting to know who I am. I'm doing more speaking gigs. And to be honest with you, I've gone from a guy that nobody knew lurking in the back of the room in a leather jacket drinking a whiskey to a guy that's now getting people asked for selfies and stuff. It's kind of weird and kind of freaky, but I'm enjoying the fact that people are taking the book, utilizing the playbook in there to actually activate things and to do things that they thought weren't possible until they read my book. And I'm really proud about that.
And that's a really great message that you're spreading, and all the tactics in there as well for anyone who like, and it's not just for people who want to like meet with so-and-so. It's also for people who their goal they view may view it as impossible because they haven't achieved it in so long. But seeing all these things possible like can inspire people who have a goal that they feel like they haven't been able to accomplish for a while. So it's not just like, can I meet this person too? But it's also, I haven't made like 8 figures or 7 figures or 6 figures, or I'm just trying to make my first $1,000 in 1 month. And to some people that feels impossible, but by hearing stories like these and the how-to also within your book gives these people hope that, hey, this is possible, and they keep putting in the work.
It gives them hope. And I never want to kind of like, you know, crap on hope. But it gives them a very simplistic roadmap. And I've said it a million times. I'm an East London bricklayer and I'm kicking around with the Pope. What's your excuse? It's as simple as that. If I can do it, and I still can't spell for crap, I had major help writing the book. I'm not the most articulate. My wife calls me her, you know, blunt instrument and her Neanderthal. But I don't worry about all the trimmings. I worry about getting it done. Everything else can, you know, fall to the wayside. It doesn't matter what you wear. It matters what you do.
And I do agree about like this focus on action, the focus on what you're doing, and especially as it relates to your goal, not just taking any action, but specific action. And as we go towards our goals, we're going to face certain challenges along the way. And I know you've had a share of challenges throughout your journey, but I'm wondering if you could share with us one of those challenges and a powerful lesson you learned during that challenge.
Challenges, failures, I've had thousands. I know it sounds strange, but I hope I continue to have them, because it's from failure that we grow. I won't allow failure to define me. I'll allow it to refine me. So until I stop failing at something, then I stop trying. And I want to keep trying because I want to be better than I am. So I've had a million and one screw-ups, rollovers. Probably one of my most impactful was halfway through my career when I started changing the way that I dressed. Now, me and you were on video Skype, and you know, I'm in my garage, and there's four motorcycles in here because I'm moving house, and there's another bunch of the other. So I'm a big bloke in a black t-shirt, drinks whiskey, and rides motorcycles. Halfway through my business startup, I started to get concerned that I didn't look the part. Now, I'd ignored the fact that I was already successful. I'd ignored the fact that my bank account was pretty good. I started to get concerned, and I started to dressing up in suits, and I actually bought a car. If anyone knows me, they find that crazy because I don't have a car now. I haven't had a car for decades, probably never will. But I bought this fancy car to try and impress you. And that's the key word. I did all of this to impress you because I thought, if I can impress you, then you'll do more business with me. Do you know the funny thing was that the more I tried to be somebody who I wasn't, I lost track of who I was, and therefore it became very confusing. How can you trust someone that's confused? So it started messing with my income. It started messing with the kind of clients I was getting into the room. Everything suddenly started to become disjointed. And it wasn't until I was actually feeling very lost that I was trying very hard to be somebody else, and it was painful and it was tiring. Then in the end, I just turned around and went, I can't do it anymore. And I actually went, I got drunk for a few days. I went into a real bender. It was a very sad few days of my life. I came out and I thought, look, if they don't like me for being me, then I can't do it anymore. And I realized then that a lot of what we do takes a lot of effort. Okay, you know, we do, you know, we work hard, it takes effort. Being you should not be one of those things that takes any effort. And so I suddenly realized that by being me, I would relate to some, I would repel others, but those I relate to, I'm on zero effort. Now 100% of my focus can be on getting it done, what's required, not on, hey, do I look good enough for you to consider the right person for you? It's a horrible tic-tac going backwards and forwards. So my big lesson came out of it, be you, you're unique, not everyone's going to love you, and that's great, but it takes zero effort to be you.
Steve, I absolutely love that lesson. I feel like there are it's tempting to wear a different mask when you're with a different crowd of people or you're trying to get the sale or something like that. But as Steve mentioned, if you are truly you, that's going to be easier for you to get more sales. You'll enjoy it more because even if you are making the money, if you have to wear that mask all the time, it's not fun. And it does take a lot of effort to be someone who you're trying to portray who isn't truly you. So I really do like that lesson. And just in the spirit of knowledge acquisition and learning as many lessons as possible, I am a very avid reader. So with that in mind, I'm wondering if you could share with us three books that you believe will have a positive impact on us.
Ooh, three books that will have a positive impact. The first one is a range of books, but basically anything by Dr. Seuss. One of my mentors and a great friend of mine, I'm proud to call him my friend, Jay Abraham. If Jay Abraham is on the binder of a book, buy it, read it, digest it, and action it. Jay Abraham is brilliant. But I remember when I went over to Jay Abraham and Jay turned around, he went, I got a book for you, Steve. And I thought he was going to go and get me one of his, books on, whatever, salesman, mentorship, business development, marketing. And he came back with a Dr. Seuss book, and it was a play. It was the thing. It was, the book was called Oh, the Places We Will Go. And I'm looking at this Dr. Seuss book, and I thought to myself, of all the books you've written, you've just given me basically one level off a pop-up book. And it's a real kiddies book, which I actually brought home and read to my kids when when I used to read to them at sleep. But it really does talk about things don't always go the right way. There's curved roads that go around the big hills. You go up a hill, you slip down. There's a lot of life lessons in there. So, J. Abraham's book's brilliant. Oh, the Places We Shall Go by Dr. Seuss. And finally, who am I going to give a good plug for? Trying to think of book. There's so many that I really, really like. I would probably say, for strange reasons, Jason Gaynard wrote a book called Mastermind Dinners. And it talks about the intricacy of getting people together, the right people at a table. The book is about how to set up these dinner parties. The lessons in there are so much greater. So I would probably say that, I would say Jason Gaynard, Mastermind Dinners.
Steve, thank you for those great book recommendations. You'll find those books in the show notes, markcabrera.com/E202. And I will say, in 202 episodes of hosting the Breakthrough Success podcast, I've never heard Dr. Seuss get mentioned before. So, I totally see how it's a good pick. I would have to read the book to get a deeper understanding, but I totally see how it makes sense.
Yeah, it's one of those books that is written for a child, but better understood by an adult. And you read it and you go, oh, hang on a minute. Yeah, I get that. But because it's done with funny, fluffy, comedic text, you kind of overlook it as a kiddie's book. But that's a powerhouse of a book there. And I can see why J. Abraham, when he goes out every now and then, instead of giving out business cards, he will give out a signed copy of one of these books. And you do understand why. So, yeah, for any of those books, even mine, before you get mine, get that Dr. Seuss book. It's well worth it.
And again, that will be in the show notes. We'll also throw in the link to Content Marketing Secrets, which is my book. That will be in markcabrera.com/book. And before we wrap up this episode, Steve, I've asked you a bunch of questions throughout our time together, but what do you believe is one question that we need to be asking ourselves more often?
Why not? It's as simple as that. Why not? There is so much going on in the world. We are overindulged with information and access, and people are getting scared and scared of trying stuff. And I do believe that quite simply, we should just ask ourselves, why not more often? Why are you not doing this? Why are you not getting a pay rise? Why is your business not making $1 million? Why are you not getting the clients? So why not? Ask yourself, why not? You know, 10 times a day, and you'll be amazed at the growth you can get.
Steve, thank you for sharing with us that great question and all of your great insights throughout our time together. Breakthrough Success listeners, if you want to keep up with Steve, he has his new book, Blue Fishing. That will be in the show notes. And you can also go to stevedsims.com, sign up there, and you'll get the free Blue Fishing cheat sheet that you can download. So once again, Steve, I can't thank you enough for sharing all your great insights with us today. It was such a pleasure to have you on Breakthrough Success.
It was an honor. Thank you, pal. Appreciate it.
How does over 100 retweets per day sound to you? My free ebook, 27 Ways to Get More Retweets on Twitter, has you covered. I use the methods within this ebook to get over 10,000 retweets every single quarter. To learn